We love baptisms at H Church, and here's the reason why we stand as witnesses as the three men got baptized, and we're going to be baptizing six other people across the day in our 10:30 service and our 5:30 service. But we stand here as witnesses as we are reminded again that we are God's beloved, we are God's children. We get to be reminded again because sometimes when you go on your faith journey, you forget. Seriously, we forget that we are God's beloved. We forget that He has adopted us into His family. And so we do this weird thing called baptism. You might be thinking, what's going on here? We put them under the water. We cheer and shout because we are standing on the sidelines cheering our brothers, followers of Jesus Christ, the God who came to find them. It'll never get old. And it will never stop not being weird. It's beautiful because that is the gospel of Jesus Christ. But here's the other reason why we love baptisms. And it's just because we get to be reminded of how God with great love and compassion entered into our broken world like He entered into the broken world of these men so that He could come and find us. And I'm saying us, and I'm not saying those, because we are part of the those who were once lost. Or perhaps you're sitting here now and you say, Bobby, I feel lost, broken, confused, afraid, addicted, restless, weary, maybe even disappointed in life, with God, but lost and feel like we have no purpose or meaning in life. Now, Luke chapter 19 captures the very heart and the mission of God for us when He said this. This was the mission of His Son, Jesus Christ. For the Son of Man came to seek and save those who are lost. You know that word lost means that you once belonged. You and I belonged. We once belonged. Like Adam and Eve, who once belonged, but now were lost in the garden. You see, when God created, and I love going back right to the very beginning, but I'm actually going to be preaching out of the Gospel of Luke. But I love going back because this is the narrative, the entire story of God's love. You see, when God created the earth in Genesis chapter 1, He looked over all that He created. How awesome is our God? And saw what He made, and He said it was good. And then the other part of His creation is when He takes a little bit of dust and He begins forming the shape of a human. And then He looks at it as He breathes His breath into it and He says, it is very good. It is very good. I want you to notice that when God created man and woman, He created because of love, not because He was bored or maybe He was tired of the Trinity and say, whoa, I need a little bit more stuff happening in my life. No, He created because of love. And God's intention always through that creation of mankind was about a relationship. God's intention always from the beginning was to have a family, a people created in His image. He was the God who put His very DNA. As you are seated here, you're saying, but I don't know this God. You still carry the DNA of God inside of you. You're saying, but I'm drifted so far, Bobby. You don't know how bad my story is. You still bear the very image of God upon your life. No matter how far you go, no matter how bad you become, how deeply you sin, you carry the image of God on your life. That is the very original blessing of God and the heart of God and the mission of God and the passion of God is to go after those who are lost. It is always God's plan to love you. And it is always God's plan for you and I to love Him back. You see, we call that God's original blessing. And my friend says this. She says, identity, and I'm quoting, identity full stop. It's always God's first move. That's it. And I loved what each one of their stories of our baptismal candidates coming to that realization of whose they are and who they are in God. Identity. It's always God's first move. And on our faith journey, God wants us to get there. But here's the truth of it. That's what we struggle with. And we struggle with it for our entire lives to believe that we are God's beloved, to live like we are God's beloved, to embody the truth that we are God's in love. That's the good news. Some believe, listen, I love this. Some believe that the earth started with a big bang and you're entitled to hold their view. I'm not even going to engage or challenge around that. I have some friends who hold that view, but I believe that the earth started with a big bang of blessing of love. But that's how God started. The God who created you, the God who formed you, the God who breathed his breath in you is the God who continues to love you no matter how far you walk away from him. Do you know that he never fell out of love with you when you fell out of love with him? He never fell out of love with you because, falls out of love with you because you sin and disappoint him. He never, ever, ever stops loving. God can't, because God is love. It's the very nature of God. It's who he is. He never stopped loving Adam and Eve, even when they sinned and they walked away and they rejected him. Verses 8 of Genesis chapter 3 says that when they sinned, they ran and they hid from God among the trees. They ran because of their shame. They ran because of their guilt. They ran because they realized in that vulnerable moment that they were naked. They ran and they hid from God and got lost in the garden, but God couldn't leave it there. We read how God goes out looking for them. Just picture it for a moment. They're lost, they're hiding, and God goes looking for them. And the first question ever posed in the Bible is this: where are you? And I want you just allow yourself to sit with that question this morning, wherever it is you find yourself. And I want you to allow that question to resonate with you. Just sit with it. As God asks each one of us the question, where are you? Where are you? You know the story that's told in Luke about the prodigal son? It was not about just about the younger brother. It was the older brother as well. It was about the older brother. As much as the younger brother was lost, the older brother was lost in the very house of God. So my question to every single one of us, whether you're a follower of Jesus Christ or not, is this: where are you? Allow that to resonate with you. Just hold that question, as I believe God has some things that he wants to say to us this morning. God goes after them. He calls out to them. He's saying to them, I've lost something that is extremely precious, something that has value. I have lost something that belongs to me, and I must find it. That is what Mark, the story, is talking about, the mission and the mandate of Jesus Christ. You see, the real narrative of the Bible and the real narrative of the story that we're going to get to in the moment, the story in Genesis, the story in Luke chapter 15, because we're going to look at the story of, and the title of my message is, He Leaves the 99. The real narrative of the Bible, right from the very beginning, is that God was for us, with us, and will never leave us. That's what Jesus came to do, sent by his Father. He's on mission to reveal the very heart of the Father, that he has come to find humanity, mankind. That's you and I seated here this morning, because we were lost. We had lost our way and had chosen another desire rather than the one desire that was meant to be for God. Every other desire came into being, and God says there's the one desire that's got to trump every other desire, and that's the desire for God and relationship with God. And you know what? Whether we like to admit it or not, no matter where we find ourselves in life, there's always this kind of a restlessness and an emptiness inside of us. You see, the real story of the Bible begins with God and us. And the real story of the Bible ends with God and us. Isn't that incredible? It begins with God and us, and it ends with God and us. And I want you to hear that again. The real story of the Bible begins with God and us, and it ends with God and us. And you hear today, and the question that God asks us, where are you? I love Psalm 136 that picks up this love of God that endures forever. It's 26 verses in the psalm, a song that the Israelites, the people of God, would sing and would declare. This is what it says: His love endures forever. Every single verse carries that phrase and that truth. And the definition of that word endures means to tolerate. Isn't God amazing? He never flinches. Even when we hold our fist to him or our finger to him, he never flinches. He tolerates us. He never gives up. His love endures forever, even when we reject him. It endures even when we leave and we walk away from him and we choose a desire other than the desire for God. Listen to what Ephesians 1:5 says. God decided in advance in his heart. How cool is that? To adopt us into his family. You know what baptism is about and why we stand on the sidelines and we cheer and we do these weird things is to remind ourselves that God has adopted us into his family. That we're part of the family of God because sometimes we can forget that. And can I say, a dysfunctional family, a beautiful family. And you know what? When it comes to family, you can't choose your family. You know you're going to have that crazy aunt. You know, you're going to have that aunt with the bristles here and all they want to do is kiss you, or that uncle and you think, just go away. That's the crazy family. And we've been adopted into that family and we can't choose our family. Maybe you're saying, Bobby, I can go to a church down the road. You're still going to have crazy family down there. He decided in advance to adopt us into his own family by bringing us to himself, that is to God, through Jesus Christ. And listen to this. This is what God wanted to do, and it gave him great pleasure. Isn't it a beautiful picture right there? For our three candidates, as you were sharing your story and standing up here, I almost had a picture of heaven opening, really. Just opening, and God just looking down, the gaze of God upon the three of you, and it gave him great pleasure. Can I say this to each one of us? That there's never a moment in time or ever on your journey of life, whether you choose to follow Jesus Christ or not, that you're not under the gaze of God. And that gaze is a gaze of love. It's not a gaze of anger or a gaze of frustration. When are these people going to get their lives together? It is a gaze of love, and you and I and the entire human race, as bad and rotten, and as sometimes, if you see what goes on in our world, we all live under that gaze of love. I want to read you a beautiful story, a story that Luke records for us, but actually Jesus is telling the story. Jesus loved telling stories, and I believe this story captures this morning, for each one of us, how God feels about us. It's a story that speaks about God's love, the lengths of God's love, the breadth of God's love, the depth of God's love, the height of God's love. It captures it for us this morning in the midst of where we find ourselves. And I'm going to read Luke chapter 15. You say, oh, there she goes again with that. I love, it's my favorite book in the Bible because that story speaks about my life. And it's Luke chapter 15, and I'm going to read the first part of three stories that Jesus tells. It's out of Luke chapter 15, verses 1 through to 7, and I'm going to read the Message translation for us this morning. Listen to God's word and allow yourself to sit with a question, allow it to resonate in your heart. Where are you? By this time, a lot of men and women of doubtful reputation were hanging around Jesus, listening intently. The Pharisees and religion scholars were not pleased because they were also hanging around Jesus. Not at all pleased. They growled and they grumbled and said, he takes in sinners and eats with them, treating them like old friends. And their grumbling triggered the story that I'm going to be speaking about this morning. Suppose one of you had 100 sheep and lost one. Wouldn't you leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the lost one until you found it? When you found that one, you can be sure you would put it across your shoulders, rejoicing. And when you got home, calling your friends and neighbors, saying, celebrate with me. I have found my lost sheep. Count on it. There's more joy in heaven over one sinner's rescued life than over 99 good people in their need of rescue. Now, just to take us into a little bit of the context of the story, verses 1 through to 2 sets the story for us. This is the context of the story, where Jesus, gathered around Jesus, are sinners, but also the religious people. Now, these religious people were the Pharisees and the scribes. And as Jesus is engaging with them, they're very angry with Jesus because he's receiving and eating with sinners. They didn't think, these are the religious people, they didn't think that it was appropriate that Jesus actually does this. He's a scribe, he is a teacher of the law. And surely you don't hang out with these disreputable, these people of questionable character. They didn't think it was appropriate for Jesus to do so. In fact, Jesus often angered and upset the religious people. And I wonder if we couldn't put ourselves, for those of us who've been long on the journey, in a category like that. Because it's so easy for us to become self-righteous on our journey. And so they were upset with Jesus, the religious people were, because they saw themselves as righteous and holy. They saw themselves as holier than these other people. Now, when we're talking about the sinners, these sinners would have actually been men and women who were sick, they were blind, they were not of a social standing, they were not trained. These people would have been the outcasts. They would have been the ones, in fact, who would have been excluded from the temple. They would not have been allowed to go in, like a kind of a service we're having here today. They would not have been allowed to enter in because they were sinners. They were the marginalized people of life. The people that you actually avoid. Oh, you know that he's a drug addict. You don't hang out with that boy. You don't hang out with that girl because she's sleeping around. And this is what was going on, setting the context for us this morning. And Jesus is actually irritated with this religious bunch of people. You know why? Because of his love for the sinner. Because his love for those who realize, you know what, I'm someone who's in need. And my prayer is, Edge Church partners, for however long you've been on the journey, that you would never get to that place where you realize, I think I've arrived. I think I'm okay. Stay in that place of humility that, God, I need you. I'm desperate for you every single day, for the very breath, for my very survival on my faith journey. I need you. And so he was irritated because they knew that they were lost. They knew that they were sick. They knew that they needed a doctor. And Jesus pushes the envelope a little further when it came to connecting with the sinners. I love the story told in Luke chapter 7. You know the story of when a woman comes and anoints Jesus? Do you know that actually she broke right into the Pharisee's house? She said, hello, you didn't get an invitation. She breaks right in, cuts across it all, pushes right in and says, well, I'm your part. And she begins to anoint his feet. And the Pharisee who owned the house, he doesn't say it, he doesn't verbalize it, but in his mind he's thinking, hey, you're the prophet. Surely you know what kind of a woman is touching you, that she's a woman who is a sinner, a prostitute. And it's into an atmosphere like this where you have the sinner, those who know that they are in need. Those who know that their lives are really not working out or going anywhere. And then you have the religious people who think, oh man, I don't need God. I don't need God. And so often when I think that we call for a response and we don't go up, or we call for, say, do you not just need a touch? And we still think, yeah, well, I don't need it. I'm thinking, God, I need it every moment. Every altar call, I want to be out here. Every time, do you need God to touch you? Yes, I want to be out here. Because there never comes a time that you say, well, I have actually passed that need. No, we never get there. Can I call us to stay humble and in that place of, God, I need you to touch me. I don't need another teach. I need a touch. So I've preached on the lost coin. I've preached on the lost son. There's a beautiful story. In fact, I've showed you the picture. It's going to come up on the screen just to remind us. This is actually one of my very favorite stories in the Bible. I have a print of the painting by Rembrandt that speaks of the story of the prodigal, the return of the prodigal son. That's the son. Just look at that picture, the richness of that story, the color, the embrace of the father. And so I've preached on that. As a constant to remind of someone, me, I'm someone who gets lost in life. I'm someone who gets lost in my mind and lost in my thoughts, and I can go as a prodigal wandering. And just the love of God, the lavish love that keeps bringing me back as I come home in repentance and confession. Today I want to talk about the 99, how he leaves the 99 to go and find the one. The length and the breadth of God's love is seen as in how he is the one. Do you know God takes the initiative to leave and go find? Sometimes we think, well, I found God. No, you didn't. God was never lost. We lost. God came to find us. Isn't that beautiful? God takes the initiative, and that's the story of grace. That it is God who takes the initiative. It is God who draws you. It is God who goes and searches for you. It is God who finds you. It's God who establishes you. It's God who reminds you of his identity. He leaves the 99 to go and find the one. With great compassion, he leaves because he realizes, whoa, hang on, one of my little scuppies, they're no longer here. I know they've gone off wandering. Just like the prodigal son, I know they've left the fold. I know he's left the house. And so he doesn't, and I love the story because this is what Jesus is trying to capture with the religious people. He doesn't despise the straying sheep. If it was us, you know what? We would want to have that strayed sheep before a church council, discipline them publicly, yes, and shame them and say, you naughty, bad sheep. Read the stories of Jesus. He never treats people like that because then every one of us would need to stand here and be shamed. Because we all have our secret sins and our struggles in life, but God is merciful to us, Karen, at WeCare. I love WeCare. You've heard me say this. Love it. Every Sunday we should stand up here and say, my name is Barbie and I gossip. My name is Barbie and I'm a hypocrite. My name is Barbie and I'm so full of opinions. And I'm dead serious. Amen. That is the gospel of grace and life. That he's the God who is always seeking, always looking. He goes to great lengths, extreme lengths. The parable gives no indication of the shepherd ever rebuking the sheep. Does God discipline us? Absolutely, he does. He does that for our own good. He will allow us to get into these places because he's busy transforming and shaping us. And then when he finds the sheep, he hoists that sheep. Let me tell you, on his shoulder to take it home, that sheep, you know what it would have weighed? Round about 55 to 65 kilograms. That's a weight that the shepherd carries as he puts it. His love is seen in how he leaves the 99 when he takes the initiative to leave, to go and find the one. And his love is seen in how he risks. We see that God always risks. He always risks for you and I. Romans 5:8 says, but God showed his great love for us by sending his son, Jesus Christ, to die for us while we were still sinners. God took a risk. Listen how the risk is seen. He took a risk in sending his son, knowing that so many of his children would not respond to that love. And yet he still chose to come. He still chose to die. He still says, even though there's no guarantee that my children would love me in return, his love led him to sacrifice his life on the cross and to take our punishment for his sin. I reckon that is a sign, and I might offend a couple of people here this morning, of reckless love, of wild love, of risky love. That is what God did for you and I. When he leaves the 99 to go and find you, to go and find me. Can I say this to each one of us? We are here today because we matter to God. You and I are here today because God took the initiative, whether you even realized it or not, for you to be here. He leaves the 99 to go and find the one. How does the story, in fact, all three stories end with this truth that, listen to the heavenly emotions of what goes on. There's rejoicing. There's celebration. The rescue of the lost sheep was a cause for proclamation and celebration. Heaven rejoices when just one person repents and returns to God. He leaves the 99. To go and search for the one. Now I want us just to take a moment in stillness and silence, and if it'll help, close your eyes. But I want you to notice this. Remember, I asked the question, where are you? Now I want you to notice, where's God? Where's God? he leaves the 99. I want you to take notice, to pause and to take note of God. Take note of God. Just close your eyes. God who takes the initiative, God who risks, who's reckless, because he loves so deeply. Where's God in this? And how's God looking at you right now?